Hello, you are currently tuned into CKVI 91.9 FM The Cave on a feature production show that will be focusing on critiquing Joel Zimmerman's, or otherwise known as Deadmau5's, music. My name is Chris Rousel. I will have my co-worker Patrick Bullock aiding me with the topics at hand. Just to go ahead and give you a bit of background about Deadmau5, he is a progressive house DJ slash producer. So what that means is that he will spin his own tracks, but he also produces his own music at the same time. He's got three CDs. Which we will talk about later on in the show. And during the show, my goal is not to just yak on about how great this guy is and how good he is at making music and everything. I mean, I really want you guys to be able to sit down and take something out of it. Even if that means just you being able to sit there and appreciate the music, that's great. But this show is basically going to be focusing strictly on critiquing, as I said, the various parts of his artwork, his masterpieces. So without further ado, let's start things off with a song. Here is Ghosts and Stuff featuring Rob Swire here on CKVI 91.9 FM The Cave. Welcome back to CKVI 91.9 FM The Cave. You guys just heard Ghosts and Stuff featuring Rob Swire. I'm Chris. You're back on your feature production show, which is focused on Deadmau5. I'm joined by Mr. Patrick Bullock. How are you doing today, sir?
Not too bad yourself.
Not bad. So I guess my first sort of conversation started with you is going to have to be, what is your take on Deadmau5?
I personally admire him as an artist.
Okay.
He's got a great repertoire. He plays good shows everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
You know, I remember back when he did his UK tour in 2010,
yep.
In the last month of December, he had to cancel, I think, the Glasgow, Ireland leg of the trip because of the weather.
Yep.
It was so bad. And I've never seen people comment any faster, like going, why? Like, come on, come back. Like, come back soon.
Yeah.
you know, it's not his fault. It was an outdoor concert in the middle of a blizzard.
Yeah, no. It's not possible.
Yeah, you can't do it. So, you know, it sucks, but, you know, you can definitely tell he wanted to do it. Like, just the way he kind of worded it in an interview he had later on in the year. Yeah. So, you know. Yeah, I admire him as an artist. He's also quite a comedian, too. If you ever pay attention to his Facebook or Twitter updates, the banter between him and his management always seems to happen.
It's always hilarious because, you know, you'll think it's him. You can't tell the difference between the two of them until he actually comes on and he states it. It'll be his management updating, like, oh, yeah, he's like, live tonight, much music, 2 hours, 10 o'clock, get ready for it. Got to mix it up on the ones and twos. And then he comes on and he's like, do you even know what the ones and twos are?
Yeah.
Be quiet.
It's like, what do you mean by the ones and twos?
Yeah, and he starts making fun of his own management. And, I mean, all of the good fun, right?
Yeah, it's not like
he's not cutting them up. He definitely prefers to be the one who's updating his social networks to all of his fans as opposed to somebody else doing it for him. He treats it like his territory.
Yeah,
he
wants to have that connection with his fans, right?
Like, absolutely. He doesn't want to have this false advertisement.
Yeah, the people who are... he wants to have like that direct link, I think, at least.
Yeah.
Well, then he wants to be like hand in hand with his fans and people who listen to his work.
Cool.
One other thing I respect him too is that he's able to work with other artists very
well. Yeah, like we just heard right there, Robert Swire. Mm-hmm. He's a European fellow, English, I believe.
Yeah.
He and the funny part is I remember reading briefly that Robert Swire's style is not Deadmau5's style at all. They're complete opposite spectrums. I mean, Robert Swire plays more rock music from what I understand.
Yeah, more or less.
Like more of an alternative sound.
Yeah, alternative.
And to hear him mash into Ghost and stuff was kind of cool. Like his voice works. It's a very melodic soft voice that fits in perfectly. I don't know. That's just my take. What do you think?
That's true. I know he did a thing with Morgan Page, Longest Road. I love that track.
Yeah,
the original is amazing.
Yeah.
But he did that. I think he was nominated for a Grammy from that in 2009.
Okay.
It's just the way he seems to be able to go hand in hand with the artists that he works with.
Yeah.
Without like any much of an issue.
It
seems to flow. And I've heard rock music get mashed in with various other artists, other DJs, and it's like, you know.
Well, you and I can even contest to that. Myself and Patrick are both DJs, and mixing rock music with any sort of club beat is difficult because the beat in the rock is usually way more complex than the club style or the house style of music, whatever you're mixing, right? Like, you get with a live drum kit, you're working with, like, what? Like, 8 or 9 different sounds mashed together all within a 4-bar sequence.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's just, a club track or something like that, it's bass, kick, snare. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's always that rhythm. It's a rhythm, in a sense. It's a step 1, 2, and 3, you know.
Yeah.
It just
mashes upon another and another and another.
Like, it's not exactly methodical, but it's always, you always kind of can predict it, in a sense.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Well, you know personally where it's going, right?
Yeah, you know where it's going, yeah.
Which is why it works for DJing. It's hard to anticipate where a beat is going to go with a rock track while you're trying to mix something in. I mean, some DJ. I guess my next question for you, Patrick, is what is your favorite song out of all of his work? I mean, like, out of all of his albums?
Out of all of his albums? That's a tough one. Personally, I'd probably pick Ghosts and Stuff, in all honesty. It's close second being Strobe. I know these are really recent songs.
Yeah.
They have a good energy to it, in a sense, I guess you can say. They make you want to, like, move and everything else. And
agreed.
Probably, in my opinion, it's probably two of his best tracks, Ghosts and Stuff and Strobe, in my personal opinion. I've heard majority of his songs.
Yeah.
But what I've really kind of, like, I don't want to say it's claim to fame, but it's breakthrough, in a sense. Like, everyone, when you play Ghosts and Stuff, wherever you go, everyone will know it's Deadmau5.
No, absolutely.
And they're like, I know this. And
you're
like, oh, yeah, Deadmau5. Like, yeah. And so, like, not to jump on the bandwagon, but personally, I my favorite track would probably be Ghosts and Stuff.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't think that's jumping on the bandwagon because, I mean, honestly, I feel that Joel really branded himself with that song.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he performed at the Much Music Video Awards. He was mixing that whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And every time that it cut to commercial, he would cut to Ghosts and Stuff. He wouldn't play any other song. And I think that was a really, really smart idea like a smart branding on his part, because it's the catchiest and riffiest song that he has. But so by playing that, people pick it up now and they go, oh, I know that song. And I think that's what happened for you. I know that happened for me. I watched the MMVAs and I didn't know who that, I didn't know who Deadmau5 was.
Yeah.
Right?
You hadn't made much of a name.
Didn't know who he was. Mm-hmm. And after I heard some of his music and I was like, I recognize that. That's that Deadmau5 guy. Like, who's that? And it clicked, and I instantly went and started listening to his stuff, bought his stuff off iTunes, and now I have pretty much his whole discography.
Yeah.
And it's spectacular to see, like, even going back and listening to some of his earlier pieces of work, building up to what he is now, he goes through so many different style changes, but still keeps to the same style.
Absolutely, yeah. Before he released his two recent albums, before he released his two recent albums, he had a few tracks called Mouse at Play.
Yes.
Well, it was actually at play, but it used to be Mouse as his kind of title, which were kind of DJ-friendly tracks where you can mix in and out as if, you know, let's say you're at a party and you want to keep that flow going, which he has a lot of good records on there. Like, personally, in my opinion, before he released 4x4 and all that jazz, I would definitely This Is the Hook. It was a very... deep. It had a very powerful bass to it.
Absolutely.
It was kind of more of a dubstep genre, but it had the house feel to it still.
Yeah.
And that was probably it was a great song to mix into, because it's the way it'd go is, you know, they have like one chunk where it's just a bass drop, and you'll have a voice come over and say, "No, this is like, you know, time for the hi hat." You know, like time for the hi hat.
Yeah.
And which would then, you know, you hear, you know, the hi hat. You'd come in, so it was kind of a breakdown of a generic house song, but done so in a way that wasn't kind of instructional. It was something you could actually move to.
Yeah,
and like that's it takes talent, in my opinion, to do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely, it's kind of cool. Again, on the track of favorite songs by Deadmau5, definitely Ghosts and Stuff and Strobe, which I think we're gonna get to. Here is Strobe by Deadmau5 on CKVI 91.9 FM, The Cave. We'll be right back, Kingston. Hello and welcome back to CKVI 91.9 FM The Cave. You just heard Strobe by Dead Mouse, and you are here on The Cave listening to a feature production show focusing on Joel Zimmerman's work. And Joel Zimmerman is also Dead Mouse.
Yes.
Yes, he is. I'm joined by Patrick.
Again.
Also. How are you, Patrick?
Not too bad yourself?
Not bad. Fantastic. So we were talking earlier about you and your favorite songs. Mm-hmm. And we just played Strobe. And I don't know about you, but while we were playing that, I was bobbing my head.
Oh, I saw.
Yeah.
We are in the same room.
I almost felt like I should do my little talking bit after, like whisper into it, because it's so quiet at the end of that song. Yeah. It has so many different dynamics.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I always find with his pieces of work. He's got different dynamic throughout the whole piece. He'll bring it from something really, really soft, bring it up to something that's so loud and has the fattest beat underneath it, and then he'll take it right back down again.
Yeah.
And it feels natural. It doesn't feel...
It's induced. Not as forced, yeah, induced.
Yeah.
A lot of DJs do that a lot. They'll try and cram like two different, I don't want to say genres, but two different feels to the song.
Be
like really, really jumpy, like a four beat song, and bring it down to something that's really, you know, dubby or something else. And it doesn't fit sometimes. You just can't.
But, it's hard.
Keep in mind, too, like songs that do that, they generally try and cram it to 3 minutes. This is a 10-minute song in a sense with the regular version. So
yeah, we had to cut that down there for time purposes. We gave you guys about, I don't know, 6 minutes out of the whole 10 for Strobe. And, of course,
but
that's just for the purpose of the show. But if you guys want to, go ahead, listen to that on YouTube or download it off iTunes and get the full 10-minute version. It really takes you right from the get-go.
Like with Dead Mouse's music in general, he has a lot of time to build up.
Yeah.
And then there's that release of – there's that 3 minutes of – fast-paced music,
yep,
and then it comes out down again slowly. You can't rush that, and a lot of people who produce music try to do that.
Yeah.
And of course, this sounds really
it sounds
off.
Awkward.
Yeah,
it doesn't
awkward.
Sound
yeah,
right.
It's a little off.
The one thing that you'll see too is, I don't know, like hop on YouTube. I've typed in Dead Mouse, Dead Mouse Strobe,
mm-hmm.
and it shows all these shows that he's played Strobe at. And you look at the people who are standing there, and they're still super excited. They're anticipating. Mm-hmm. They know what's coming.
They know, yeah.
But you know what? They're going to patiently wait. And I mean, most people who are out at like clubs and shows and stuff like that would be like wanting to get ready to bounce around and everything. But no, all these people are just standing in awe and anticipation.
Yeah.
And they're all just staring at him, and they're waiting for him to drop it. And it's this marvelous thing. It's really quite wonderful.
Absolutely. He's talking about the shows, because I'm sure you've searched a few shows.
Yeah.
On your behalf, if you can even recall off the top of your head, what would you say like one of your favorite lighting setups would be? Like, what city could you say like that cue's been lit up perfectly for you? If you pay much attention.
I don't really know. I can't
put
it.
Really, yeah, you can't really, unless you're like, in every single show. You can't really.
Absolutely.
Say.
Yeah, I mean, like I only had the chance to see him once, right? And that was here in Kingston. I've seen videos of him down in Miami.
Yeah.
Performing down at one of the music festivals down there. I think it was the Winter Music Festival.
Yeah.
And that was spectacular. It was really cool. Just the whole stuff that he had going. I mean, it's quite cool. I don't know. Like, there were tons of people there.
Oh yeah.
And everything was almost blacklit.
Probably.
Which was kind of cool. But it didn't alter the camera angle at all. Like, it didn't take away from what you were seeing. Like, it was still really clear. And, of course, there was just the one clear spotlight on Dead Mouse the whole time. It was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite nice. What about yourself?
Recently, I'd probably be the most recent, in London. He did a show over there in January.
January.
Yeah, January of... after New Year's. January of 2011.
Yeah.
And... just the way he had the Earl's Court set up with the cube. Like, it was just the way it was set up.
I love that cube.
That cube is pretty much his claim to fame for shows.
It's wicked. I don't know if you guys ever get the chance. Go ahead. Again, YouTube or Google it. Dead Mouse with a cube. It's like this cube that's lit up by LED.
Mm-hmm. And but it's got a center section cut out where he can mix inside of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's because a few of the shows he's done, his mouse head, you know, he has many of them.
Yes.
Obviously. He has millions of them. Not millions, but you know what I mean. It's on some of the shows, they'll have an LED pattern, but it'll be receptive to what's being played on the LEDs.
Yeah.
And so like whatever's going on in the cube walls will happen on his face, and they'll actually put faces on it. So like there'll be no eyes, because you know how on some of the hats he'll have eyes.
Yeah.
They won't have the eyes on it, but it'll be digitally put on there by an LED setup.
Yeah.
Which is, in my opinion, pretty nice.
The one thing that really gets me too with that LED hat is that he'll write messages across it to his audience while he's playing. It's so cool. Sorry, continue with what you're saying.
Actually, it reminds me, B-Sod, one of his songs, B-S-O-D.
Yep.
Of course, in the middle of the show, I think this was actually down in Miami, he had the cube go blue screen of death.
Okay.
The B-Sod stands for blue screen of death. And it went blue, and the face is, it had a face on it, right? And as it said, you know, I can't remember what the term it was. Some things are
silhouette.
Yeah, so, and it was just like, you know, it was pretty good. And that brings that to the point we made earlier in the show, is that he makes a lot of jokes. Like, the music stops, and then the L goes dark, and then it comes on the cube, blue screen of death. And it's like, and then the music comes on again after a minute there. He looks a little angry, and then he just keeps going.
The one thing that I found about him, too, he's quite comedic, even if he does have a little bit of a screw-up during one of his shows. Like, when we saw him here in Kingston, what happened? We saw the tweet later on about it. It was, like, messed up cables or something. One of the cables quit, and he's just standing there looking at his people, and he's just like, hey, going to come and get me another cable?
There was, before he even got on stage, because he, of course, has frontman, the speaker on the left-hand side of him blew.
Yeah.
So that was a commission then, and then later on the show, something happened with his tables.
Yeah.
And then right after that, like not even 20 minutes later, he noticed the cable was messing up because he mixes with four platters, right?
Yeah.
And he noticed he wasn't getting input from one of them, and he's just like, "Come on, like this is now three things in an hour that has gone wrong." Like.
Yeah.
After that, great show. Great show in general, even before. He was able to work with the problem. That's something that's really key. A lot of DJs in clubs, they play like mixed CDs. Like they mix them personally in a studio or something like that. And they'll play them, and when they start to skip, or an issue happens, they're sitting there going, "What do we do? We don't know. We don't know what we're gonna do.
We don't have anything else."
And so, he was able, and that's one great thing that any performer, producer can do, is roll with it.
Yeah.
And keep the show going, even though there might be some problems.
Absolutely. I mean, he did that so well when we saw him. One thing that I actually I remember hearing about is that he actually collapsed on stage one time while he was performing.
It was back in D.C., Washington, D.C. He was playing a show. This from like beforehand, he was pretty, you know, you're on the road, you get pretty tired, right?
Yeah.
And he actually just collapsed on stage.
Physical exhaustion. It happens.
Was admitted to the local hospital there.
Yeah.
And he had to cancel his entire basically like I said in Glasgow, right? You know, everyone was prepped for it, and then he collapsed just from exhaustion, and he had to cancel 9 shows right afterwards.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it's scary. I mean, that hat is pretty heavy.
Yeah.
The head, sorry, not the hat. The head.
Oh, it is. I tried to make
heavy.
One.
Yeah.
It's heavy.
It sits on your, in, you know, like if you're doing the LEDs on it or something like that, you are, of course, now having electronics being run around your head, so it's even making more heat, you know, even though there's probably an exhaust fan in there to cool it down, like a mascot suit in a sense. They always have those little fans here and there. You can't see them.
Yeah.
But a fan can only do so much. When you're moving around and you're getting into the music, you're creating body heat and it can't compensate sometimes, right?
Agreed.
And, you know.
It's, but you know what? He learns, he works with it, right?
Yeah. Okay.
The one thing that we were talking about earlier is that we were talking about how he mashes different styles together. So progressive house is his main style, but he also mashes dubstep.
Yeah.
Quite well.
With 4x4 equals 12.
Yeah.
A lot of his tracks have a bit of a dubby feel to it.
Yep.
But still staying true to the progressive house.
Yes.
And yeah, he does do electro house as well. Music. A lot of it is very housey trance music, but he kind of, like we said, you know, he kind of goes out into the other genres, and he definitely focuses a lot of that, in my opinion at least.
Yep.
On with a dub feel, garage feel.
Agreed.
But you know,
I think we're gonna go ahead here and play our listeners one last song.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for tuning in to this production show on CKVI 91.9 FM, The Cave. Here is Raise Your Weapon by Deadmau5. Thank you for tuning in, Kingston. Cheers. Ripping through like a missile, ripping through my heart, brought me up this life.